The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The UN General Assembly adopted a resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and urging nations to take all measures necessary to put pressure on Israel. Now, it comes as Israeli gunfire and airstrikes have killed at least 60 Palestinians in Gaza, most of them near an aid site in the centre of the enclave. That's according to Gaza health officials. Another similar attack occurred at Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza. It's reported that 14 people had died by Israeli gunfire as they approached another of these joint American-Israeli aid sites run by what's known as GHF. In Rafah. I'm joined by the UNICEF spokesperson, James Elder, who is in southern Gaza. There is a delay on the line, but I'll say, hopefully, good morning, James.
Fat, hi there. Good morning.
Now, there is a kind of a second of a delay, so I shall ask you my questions as succinctly as I can. The situation in Gaza at the moment, first of all, how did you manage to get in? Was it difficult to gain entry?
Yeah, it's always difficult. It's a rotation system, Pat, through the military in terms of if you're approval or not. But no, getting in is okay. Obviously, for people getting out is their greatest suffering. And the situation on the ground, no, we are at an all-time low. There is absolutely no doubt there. I mean, only a few days ago, a nutritional Palestinian colleague was talking to me about, goodness me, this horror show that somehow people scrape by with so little, displaced so many times, so many loved ones killed. And he was explaining to me, but you cannot eat nothing. And this is the conversation, the starvation. Now, this morning, as we are critically low on the fuel that water is needed for pumping, treatment and distribution, he's adjusted that to, OK, you can survive without food for a week, but you cannot without water.
What is being allowed in by the Israelis? Is it strictly speaking the GHF aid, or are other agencies being allowed to bring food and water and fuel through?
Less than 10% of what is needed. Strictly, it is that the private contractors guarded by the Israeli military, which, as we know, is a couple of sites in the south. And during the ceasefire, it's important to remember when malnutrition decreased and disease decreased, it was 400 sites across the Gaza Strip. That's humanitarianism. You've got to go, as you know, Pat, to where people are. You can't ask the elderly, a single mum, the disabled, those with amputations to walk 30 miles in a combat site. That's what's being demanded of people. So there is some food. UNICEF got nutrition food in. I was at a site yesterday in Gaza City with hundreds of mums and grandmums trying to get the nutritional supplies that we have managed to get there. We know it's not enough, but it's what we're able to bring in. UNICEF, we keep the desalination plant running, but we've not received any fuel since the ceasefire broke, so that's absolutely critical now. So this is a virtual blockade once again, and when you combine a lack of fuel for water, trucking and treatment, and the denial of so much food, and only to the strongest, only to those that might is right, and those with knives are getting the same people getting aid all the time at these militarized sites, then, yeah, as I say, Pat, unfortunately, I know people have heard this a lot, but now in terms of risk of disease outbreak and malnutrition, we've hit an all-time high.
Now, this crowd, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which was jointly put together by the Americans and the Israelis, if they were to open up more centres, do they have the expertise anyway to deliver the aid, or is this simply a fig leaf?
No, absolutely. No, it's a veneer. So humanitarianism is a few, I guess it's two parts. One is, because I do get asked, isn't this better than nothing? And well, of course, the alternative is not nothing. The alternative is what UNICEF and very brave partners did during the ceasefire, which, as I say, was 400 distribution points. UNICEF, we were going door to door to do malnutrition. So the alternative is the aid systems and the aid agencies that have worked in, you know, scores of conflict zones since World War II. That's the alternative. This is you know, the implementation of a strategy to deny aid in across parts of the Gaza Strip and drag people to the south. I guess on top of that, if you will, the two additional points on this one is that aid, of course, is much more than a box of food. It's painkillers. My goodness, Pat, of the things that have shocked me here, yes, I see hundreds of children with amputations, with burns. Now I'm hearing those children as well, Pat. It's the lack of painkillers, the screaming of little girls and boys. So A, it is painkillers, it's antibiotics, it's hygiene kits, it's, I don't know, obstetric kits, it's incubators, it's ventilators. There's no even acknowledgement of the other things that are required for survival. And as we see, we're almost seeing a mass casualty event every day of these things because they're done with no sense of dignity, with no sense of how humanitarian aid is delivered. They're in combat zones. We've had children killed. I met a little boy who simply went to get... His dad gave him... His dad gave him money to get bread. He saw a stream of people heading south. He thought, this is my moment to come back with a box of food for my family. Instead, drones shot. There was gunfire. A tank shell was shot. He has now got shrapnel throughout his body without the painkillers. That's children simply trying to get aid through these sites.
Now, you mentioned the building shaking. How secure can you be? I mean, you're moving around Gaza to various locations to see what's going on, to report to UNICEF on the operations and the challenges. But I presume you fly under a UNICEF flag, and does that even offer you protection? Because ordinary people do not have that kind of badging that might offer some sort of shield.
Spot on. That's a great question. And it's a strange one because there are nights where, I mean, the bombardment never stops. And there are nights where, we have the cracked glass and the whole building shakes and it's unsettling, or at least you just want to sleep because you need to function the next day. And then, I look out my window at just an ocean of tents. And so there's a sense of immense guilt because there's no deconfliction site for where people are in these sites. So, yes, there's meant to be a degree of protection. Of course, we've seen more humanitarian workers, more United Nations workers killed here than any war since World War II. UNICEF ourselves has had multiple occasions where our vehicles have been shot from positions only occupied by the F. There is no doubt this is the most dangerous place for a child, for an aid worker, for a journalist, for a mum. Unfortunately, it ticks every box. Mm.
The other day on the program, we played a clip. You may have seen it online, of a young 10 or 11-year-old boy whose mother had just been killed. They were on their way to try and get food from GHF. And his brother was missing, and his father was out searching for the body of his mother and the body perhaps of his brother, or maybe his brother was surviving. But he was impassioned, and he was saying, aid is one thing, but aid with humiliation. We don't want that. We want aid given in the right way. But also he said, where are the Arab nations? I mean, have others tried to help and been frustrated by the Israelis, because the Palestinians actually feel utterly abandoned?
It's amazing you say that on the humiliation. I was sitting with a fourth year English literature student. It's always important to remember the young people here, the education rate, the literacy rate so high, the envy of the region. Fourth year literature student, and she said exactly that, James. It is so humiliating to starve. Every night to take a bowl, to go to a hospice, hope to get a ladle of soup. That's it. I've had other people, you hear sentences here that you never imagine a person would formulate. A woman who got badly injured down at one of these GHF sites and didn't get a box but said she'd go back simply because, quote unquote, if I'm going to die, please don't let it be through starvation. Now, in terms of other states, yes, there's no doubt that we're just not seeing enough action anywhere for the people of Gaza from any member states. When it comes to aid, it doesn't need to be alternative, because the reason given for blocking United Nations aid is commonly used as looting and as aid diversion. And looting, of course, is simple economics. During the ceasefire, there was no looting because the market was full. You want to kill a black market, just allow food in. I've seen that time and again with flour, where suddenly the price collapses. And when there is food in diversion, Pat, the answer is show us the proof. UNICEF has a myriad of accountability systems over decades of practice in places without governance. We do targeted distribution, third-party monitoring. So No evidence at any point has been shared with us formally of systematic or any level of aid, this diversion to Hamas of any meaningful level. And then, of course, beyond the evidence is the logic, you know, the logic of what value to Hamas are incubators or vaccines or ventilators. So, yeah, all member states have a great responsibility to increase the pressure on Israel to allow humanitarian aid to flow. And I think that's an important point you made, Pat. I mean, member states who provide diplomatic, financial or material support to parties committing grave violations against children also bear responsibility in a legal sense.
The question of markets, you know, if sufficient supplies come in and ordinary markets become available, and you say the price will fall because that's the way the market works, what people are getting at the moment is aid that is delivered, by GHF as a, I suppose, a humanitarian gesture, inefficient and inadequate though it may be. But I'm just wondering, when the markets do resume, if there is an opening up to massive convoys of aid, where do people get the money, the wherewithal, even to go to the market? Because, I mean, there's no jobs.
Absolutely spot on. So this is why humanitarian aid is the lifeline, and it literally is the lifeline. It's what keeps people alive. It's the water, the sanitation. It's the flour. It's the sustenance to keep you alive. The commercial activity is what then is, you know, the fruit, the vegetables, the chicken, adding that nutritional level. So there's two parts to a life. One is sustaining life. The other is, you know, giving something like some degree of quality of life. The markets, when there is absolutely enough, then you just see prices fall to a level where for enough people, not to all, enough people, they can start to buy some fruit and vegetables when they fall to a tenth of what they would be. Right now, onion is $23, I don't know, 20 euro, a single onion. At the same time, you're right, though, there's a desperate lack of cash. So if you're lucky enough to have money in your bank account, you are charged a 40 to 50% cost to get your money out. But when we see prices collapse in markets, as we do on things like flour, when enough comes in, then yes, things become accessible. Without that, though, that's why hundreds of trucks a day from the United Nations, the sort of nutrition UNICEF does, that is the sustenance. That's what keeps people alive. And again, that's what happened during the ceasefire. It was extraordinary. I wasn't here, Pat, but I hear from so many people the propensity, the ability to recover. People said within days in Gaza City, they were in a restaurant having taken a cappuccino, eating a pizza. I guess that is after 20, 30 years of what people have endured here, their ability to flip and to respond and to recover life is immense, might be unparalleled. But of course, right now, they are absolutely, you know, on their knees.
Finally, James, I have to ask you whether or not the news overnight of Israel's preemptive strikes on Iran, whether or not people in Gaza believe this is going to complicate matters, perhaps make matters even worse. I don't know. What is the reaction?
Yeah, I think it's only that. Right now, every person I speak to, you always ask, how are you? And it can sound like a ridiculous question, but you mean it both as a human and you're also meaning to give a sense of your life. And the answer is always surviving. And that's not a glib answer. That is what people are doing from morning to night, whether you're a head nurse or whether you're unemployed, your focus is on surviving. And at the moment, so it's the same answer. But yes, certainly when connectivity went in the north 3 days ago where I was and now across the Gaza Strip a day ago, people feared the worst. People feared something would be happening. So for them, yes, this all every escalation always bodes badly for civilians in Gaza.
UNICEF spokesperson James Elder. James, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.